I'm joined in the studio with Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. Again, I appreciate you coming up and taking the time to speak with us about all things Murray State.
All things Murray State. That's a great topic, and thank you so much, Matt, for having me come back up to WKMS. And, you know, again, as we hit spring and heading into graduation, it's a great time to be on a university campus. We have a lot of tremendous opportunities, a lot of tremendous things that are going on here at Murray State University. And you know, let me start off with providing some one-offs, if you will, from our faculty and staff and the great work that they're doing. First, I'm very pleased to announce that Dr. Urali, a professor in our TSM program, just published a book, The Internet of Things, Platforms, Connectivity, Applications, and Services. And, you know, it's absolutely amazing what is going on with the Internet of Things. And I've talked about that to some people, and they give me this quizzical look. What is the Internet of Things? Well, reach into your pocket, you got an iPhone. Look at your wrist, you got an iWatch. You got Google Glasses. You've got all these other applications and technology that are really taking hold and changing a lot of things that way we think, act, and do. I was driving back from Frankfurt, again, lobbying on behalf of Murray State, and my car is the Internet of Things as my iPhone talks to the computer, or to the car, so I can have conversations with individuals on that four-hour drive back. So how all those things work together is absolutely phenomenal, and just something that's really fun to think about. Want to give another shout out to Beth Donovan, an assistant professor of mathematics and statistics. Been the leader of Mathematics Day at Murray State. Over 100 students coming to our campus, coordinating the events, the exams, the schools, the volunteers, and just providing absolute outstanding leadership. And I know Dr. Donovan is an individual that say, well, it wasn't me, it was a bunch of individuals coming together. And that is so very true, but she's the leader of that pack. So again, something exciting to bring those students to campus and hopefully recruit them to become future Murray State students. Speaking of bringing people to campus, I want to give a congratulations to Brian Harrison and Rudy Otway, lecturer of Institute of Engineering and assistant professor of the Institute of Engineering, respectively, for bringing over 10 area high schools for the engineering challenges as part of Engineering Day. Again, a lot of students coming on campus, they were designing toys, they were designing various robots and catapults, and really to see that excitement grow and to move forward is absolutely outstanding. Also, want to thank Janine Duncan, assistant professor in adult career and special education, who organized the Status of Women's Conference, a day-long educational event that examines the barriers and opportunities for women engaging in civic life and how to consider to take on more opportunity spaces that will advance their careers and the status of women. Obviously, something that's very, very important, and we're glad that she is moving forward on those various things. We also had a great opportunity this over the last week or so when Samantha White, one of our students, was named the Fulbright. And I want to thank Carol Inman and Latrissa Trites for working with her, guiding her through the process, giving her encouragement, being their cheerleader, being her critic, and really finalizing and providing the foundation for her to be very, very successful as a Fulbright recipient. And if I'm not mistaken, that is the second Fulbright we've had in the last 4 years, and I do believe the third over the last 15. And so it's just exciting to be having Carol Inman and others, Latrissa Trites in this case, really taking on those challenges. Want to thank Peggy Pittman-Monk for her leadership. As many know, she is the Associate Professor of Social Work. She did exemplary work and leadership in the reaffirmation of the Social Works program from the Council on Social Work Education. I received a letter just 2 days ago that has been reaffirmed. And so, again, excited for that and thankful for all of her work in those various areas. We've got two faculty and a staff person I also want to give credit to, Tressa Ross, over in the College of Education and Human Services. She's the Recruitment and Retention Coordinator there. She was recognized as Murray State University's Staff Person of the Year, and she is so dedicated to student success. She is so dedicated to working with our students on a very personal basis to make sure that they have the tools to be successful. She will lay out the plan for them. She will provide the opportunities for them. Obviously, the students have to have the grit and determination to follow that plan, but she is just a wonderful person to be on our campus. Similarly, the faculty member of the year goes out to Bob Valentine. Again, a great individual who is a joy to have on campus. He is an individual that is works diligently with the students and does a lot of great things to help them in their careers, but also very, very involved in the community as well. And then finally, I'd like to give a congratulations to Dr. Susan Eddington, Assistant Professor in Education. She's on our Madisonville campus, and we have the Golden Apple Award, which is sponsored and selected by the Alumni Association, but is solely based on student recommendations. And the students who nominated her and provided the testimony on her behalf was just absolutely outstanding. And knowing Dr. Eddington and all the things that she has done for students in her 20-plus career at Murray State University, the lives that she has touched, it is just absolutely fitting. And she is retiring at the end of this academic year. She has created an enormous legacy for Murray State, for the faculty that will follow in her shoes. And when you think about all the educators that she has put forward into the profession and all the students that they have touched and moved forward, literally tens and thousands of individuals that Dr. Eddington has positively impacted. I also have to say that she is the first person to receive the Golden Apple Award from one of our regional campuses. And her dedication to serving the region is absolutely outstanding. So there's just some of the things that are going on at Murray State University that is just, again, something that's so very, very important. And do not want to miss an opportunity to sing the praises of our faculty and staff.
If you hear some cheering outside, we're recording this before All Campus Sing is getting underway. It's the 60th annual All Campus Sing, a beloved tradition here at Murray State.
Oh, absolutely. It is. And it is a lot of fun. And, you know, it culminates at Leavitt Auditorium on the steps. And, you know, 1,000 people will be in the quad area watching it. There'll be 2,000 or 3,000 online that will be watching it live. And if you look at the past year websites on that, over 10,000 people will watch it. But it really, it's a 3 to 4 to 5 week tradition where every night walking home from Wells Hall to back to Oakhurst and hearing the individuals, the organization sing on the various steps. I don't know how many times they would be on the steps of Wells Hall singing as we're holding a meeting in the conference room there. Mm-hmm. And also going home, last night, several groups came to the steps of Oakhurst to do some final touch-ups. And that's been going on for the last week as well. The smaller groups, I will say this, we invite them in for hot chocolate and cookies after they do their performance. We had two sororities with about 100 young ladies on there. We don't have that much hot chocolate and cookies in Oakhurst. But it's just such an amazing opportunity for the campus to come together. The students and their dedication, they really start working on this, I think, in November or December. The camaraderie that is established, the teamwork that is established, the leadership skills. I mean, if you're going to organize 50 to 60 young men or women or whatever group, you got to establish those skills and really get to the performance of it. To see them go onto the stage of Leavitt Auditorium with all the individual there and the community support that is comes out, it is an absolute fun event. Walking in this morning from Oakhurst and seeing the tents, I usually walk in around 7 a.m. and they were already out there. They must have slept overnight, and that happens every single year. Something that's very special, something that's that really establishes Murray State on a great platform. So, again, it's just exciting to see them do everything that they're doing.
We look forward to our aerial view up here in the Fine Arts Building overlooking the quad and look forward to sharing the video as well. We'll put the video with this web post here. Another thing that will have happened by the time this interview airs is a designation to the Murray State ROTC program. Can you talk a little bit about the Racer Battalion?
The Racer Battalion is our ROTC program and part of the military science effort here at Murray State University. And the young men and women who go into the ROTC program, outstanding individuals, outstanding citizens, and something that I truly have a great deal of respect for them to basically volunteer to be a part of our military, to be part of the organization that protects the freedoms not only for the United States but for the world as a whole. The leadership skills that they are gaining and going through that program. And one of my most emotional times of the year is to see them commissioned, usually the day before graduation, and then when they walk across the stage the next day, when we stop the ceremonies to honor those individuals. The response from the community, the response from those in the auditorium is absolutely breathtaking and something that's very, very important. And this year, the Racer Battalion is being recognized as the best in the 5-state region, and it is just exceptional that our racer battalion, who's not the largest, and we never claim to be the largest, but they are clearly the best. And they're under the command of a Colonel Lance Oskey, and we're excited to have him on campus to see us in action and to bestow that tremendous honor on behalf of the Racer Battalion and the cadets and the faculty that support them.
In last week's town hall meeting, you mentioned the word privatized, a term that sets off alarm bells for many in public higher education, and it doesn't seem sustainable. Can you explain what you mean by Murray State has become privatized, and how does this course turn around?
Well, I think that when you say that privatization is not sustainable, I actually would disagree with that. I think that the notion that with the facts of the financial model at play is that the dollars coming from the state, state-funded dollars, state appropriations, and other resources also coming from federal government, et cetera, has significantly declined. We can document that over the last 10 years. We can document that over the last 15 years. And then also within those dollars, the ability to use those dollars for education and general operations has become even more and more restricted. 10 years ago, we received approximately 43% of the state appropriation, and that includes auxiliaries. If you do not include auxiliaries, that number actually goes up to about 60%, but including the auxiliaries, which at that time represented 16% of our budget. Now we're down to 28%. Again, that's also including auxiliaries, and if you take out and just talk about the education in general, that number drops down. But a very important part within that is 10 years ago, our state appropriation, 10% of our state appropriation covered all of the pension cost. 10% of our state appropriation, 10 cents of every dollar that the state provided us would go to the pension. That number is now going to be nearly 50 cents of every dollar. So not only has the dollars gone down, but the ability to use those dollars for the education enterprise has significantly been strained. So at the same time, we are now being more reliant on the funding sources from private sources, our students, their families, private gifts, and et cetera. That is what we mean by becoming privatized. And our tuition dollars, our private gifts, our fees, our auxiliaries enterprise, again, which is all, you know, if you take the auxiliary enterprise itself, it is 100% based on the fees, if you will, and the prices of room and board and et cetera is being borne by families and our students. And so the privatization of higher education is extremely well documented, and it does change the focus, if you will, of how you think about and run a university. Is it sustainable? To not think about us as a privatized university is not sustainable. To say that we can continue to rely on the state to fund a majority of higher education, that is not sustainable. To believe that the funds that are coming to the university that can be used in a free manner, if you will, to fund programs and to expand and everything else is not sustainable. During this time frame, we've seen increased enrollments, and the numbers are going down from the state. So we have more students and we have less state appropriation. To not think about tuition dollars, to not think about where the funding sources are coming from, that to me is not sustainable. Is this a shift in higher education that is all of a sudden? No, it's been going on for quite some time. There's different states have gone at different rates, different universities at different times. But one of the things you can do is Google privatizations of universities, and you will see articles back into the late 90s, but very heavy in the early 2000s. And this is where we are right now. Over the last 10 years, each year we've become more and more privatized. It is, and I will be very clear, we are not becoming a private university. We are not a private university in terms of legal as well as ethical and moral stances. As a public university, we are here to serve the public good. We are here for access to provide access to students who are college ready and college able. We are here to serve a public mission in serving our communities. And we are also here to serve the public good. To do those activities, however, we must have a privatized viewpoint of our financial operations and those type of things. And so And also, I will say that on the legal standpoint, we are not becoming a private university. We have a Board of Regents that represents the citizens of Kentucky, appointed by the governor, affirmed by the Senate. That's not going to change. If we were going to become, I've had one person ask me, can we become a private university? That would require legislative action, which I don't feel that we would be successful in that. And then the second thing is we would have to basically buy all the capital assets, the land, the buildings, and et cetera. But again, we are becoming a privatized university. You know, a good case in point of that, too, in the current budget that is being sent back to the General Assembly, there is no budget for capital asset preservation. If we are going to tackle deferred maintenance on our facilities, if we're going to renovate a facility, if we are going to do any major capital restoration, and which we need to do, all of those funds need to come from our coffers. We cannot, there is no allocation whatsoever in the public funds to support these facilities, which are actually publicly owned. And so, again, the model of privatization, we're not private, privatization of our business model is where we are. To not acknowledge that, not to realize the importance of recruiting and retaining students and making sure our students are able to graduate and to go out and do amazing things, because that helps with, again, the recruitment, and to be very aggressive in our recruitment activities and our retention efforts. That is where we will be able to see our budget grow, to stabilize and those type of things. State appropriations over the next several years, are going to be coming more and more through the performance funding model, which is, again, based on recruiting students, retaining students, and graduating students. And even through that model, the amount of funds put into that model will not significantly increase over the next several years. In fact, this year, all of the state universities received according to the budget that is being sent back to the General Assembly, is receiving a 6.25% budget reduction. They did put $31 million into the performance funding pool, but the number of cuts outweighs the money that they're putting into the performance funding pool. And I could see that type of budgeting process escalate in the years to come. And so, again, it goes back to how will Murray State receive its funds? It will receive its funds through tuition and through a performance funding model that is based on recruitment, retention, and graduation of students. So, again, we are becoming privatized. It is a mindset. It is not a legal or a moral objective. It is a way that we will look at and need to look at our fiscal operations, our business operations, and guide us as we make decisions for the long-term stability of Murray State University. Hmm.
In the town hall, you mentioned around 10 to 15 filled positions are to be eliminated. Do these people know who they are?
This is probably, well, I wouldn't say probably, this is the hardest part of our job, and especially in these times in which we have to make personnel decisions. And it's very difficult, but we need to shrink some of our operations. And we have notified the individuals that are currently on the reduction in force list. They were notified over the last couple of days, and we've done so early. In previous years, we've actually done it later. We've done so early this time because we want to work with those individuals to have them have opportunities for jobs that may come up between now and the end of the fiscal year. We want to work with those individuals to see if we can place them within Murray State and on our campus. We provide them access to our career center if they want to seek opportunities off campus and throughout the area. We obviously want them to be successful, but that is a very, very difficult part. But those individuals have been notified. As we continue with the budgeting process and make some final, continue to finalize various decisions, we may need to increase that a little bit. It will not be significant increases, but we may need to add some individuals to that reduction in force list. We will do so in a manner, again, that is as humane as possible. These are professionals. These are individuals. These are members of our community, and we will treat them with the utmost respect and provide them all the possibilities that we can.
That kind of goes into my next question, which is outsourcing several services on campus was presented as a means to meet some budgetary needs. Is the hope or expectation to have contracts for all of these by the beginning of the next fiscal year? And should any of these not be outsourced, would there be further job loss or program cuts to address that funding?
Well, outsourcing, again, is a very difficult decision. We're dealing with community members. And we've always had a mindset, and I think it is a good mindset, of how do we make sure these individuals remain employed at Murray State University? And I just mentioned that with the reduction in force discussion. Because of the pension crisis, because of the significantly increasing cost of the pension, this year, 49 cents of every $1 in wages is going to the pension liability, if you will. Next year, that number is going to be 84 cents, and that will and most likely will not decrease in any time in the near future. And that's for KERS employees. We've been notified that KTRS, the teachers' retirement system, which also has a lot of professional staff in it as well, will most likely double next year. And so, again, that is escalating. And so when we think about the cost of employment escalating so high, we need to find ways to avoid that cost. And outsourcing is a way in which we can do that. And to me, what that does is it preserves the opportunity for someone to be employed within our community and serve Murray State. It's different than saying we're going to preserve their job at Murray State. But to me, again, it's about how do we preserve those opportunities for individuals to be employed within our community, to stay here, and serve Murray State University. The big difference is by outsourcing, we don't have those expenses on our books. The individual firm coming in would absorb those costs, and they also would not have as high costs because they would not be paying into the state pension process. And so, again, I want to be very clear, this is not an issue about the quality of service. This is not an issue about the individuals themselves. This is a discussion of cost and how to preserve opportunities for employment. We do not want jobs to leave Murray State. We don't want jobs to leave the community. And how can we most in the best and fiscal in this fiscal environment keep those jobs in the community and serving our great university? We're looking at dining. That one is a very large one. The RFP is out. We believe that seven firms are looking at it very heavily. Will all seven make a bid? Probably not, but we expect a good response. And we would expect to have that one turn around fairly quickly. Would it start by July 1 or close to it? Most likely. Again, but the bids that may come back may not prove that point out either, and we'll have to go to Plan B. There are some other areas, buildings and grounds and facilities and those type of things, that can be done a little bit later. We've built in some flex time, if you will, and on the budgeting process, so not everything has to start, you know, July 1. These are monumental shifts. These are significant work to be done on both sides, and so we've built that into the process, and we will be following through on those activities. If something significantly changes or, you know, alters that, we will have to make other decisions. And what those are at this particular time, we really couldn't tell. You know, a budget is a plan. A budget is a forecast. A budget is a set of assumptions of revenues and costs and activities and various things along those lines. I was, you know, once told, and I believe this, you know, you do a budget and approve it on June 30th and set it in motion, and on July 2nd, it's outdated. It's all about making sure we have correct assumptions, making sure that we have contingencies in play, making sure that we have alternatives and the flexibility to make those type of decisions. That's why when we do our budgeting process, we always budget, a contingency fund in there. B, we always estimate revenues as low as we think. We never overestimate those. And I will say that we start with the revenues. We don't start with expenditures and then say, okay, how do we make the revenues match? We start with the revenues and then start putting in where we think certain things will come in or not come in. And that's the art of budgeting. It is not an easy process. It's a very long process. A lot of decisions have to be made throughout. Setting clear priorities is part of that process, making sure that we're able to fund the things that we need to fund, making decisions on what we need to reallocate funds and where some things, and especially in this fiscal environment, what are some of the things that we're going to greatly reduce, if not eliminate?
Health services was mentioned to as not being in the next budget. Is the hope there that a contract will be inked fairly soon? Or if there's no contract for this, then would there then not be health services provided?
What we're looking at there, and it's really interesting, we did two RFP rounds. and did not receive a bid that, to be honest, met the needs of Murray State of having health services on our campus. One of the things that, to our credit as a community and to the detriment of the RFP process, is that there's very strong, viable health services very close to Murray State University through urgent care systems, through the hospital, and through various other type of things. And so the organizations that would typically come to work on a university saw those other entities and basically said, we're not going to be able to provide the services that is truly needed. And so what we're doing is working with the local health providers. We will be designing hopefully some preferential treatment for our students and et cetera. And we'll be looking at how to provide transportation to and from the campus for those students, and also working with those providers so that if a student does not have insurance, that there is a fixed cost that they can know about what they can do. So having health services on campus next year will not happen. That is a budgetary type of decision. It's a very unfortunate one. Health services costs roughly around $600,000 to operate. Again, this is not an issue of the quality. It is not an issue about the individuals. It's a financial matter. The services that have been offered has been diminished, as people will know, over time. And a lot of things were going off to the urgent cares and hospital and those type of things. Instead of having something that doesn't meet a need and adds to the cost factor, that was a very difficult decision to make. And I think we are working on the finalization of that plan with the local urgent and hospital care associations to properly serve our students and also provide opportunities for others.
For the sake of understanding, can you tell me how reserves work and under what scenario that would be sort of tapped into?
You know, a lot of people say, well, you have these big reserves, just you use that. We've got a $12.8 million budget imbalance based on increased cost, priorities, and revenues coming in. Just go to reserves, take the $12.8 million, whatever, pop it in, and off you go. We need to remember that reserves are one-time funds. They do not reoccur. They're not magically going to be filled up. Imagine a sink with full of water, and you take 10 cups of water out of it. And that's how much you have, and use it to water the plants. That whatever water you have left, that's it. Ongoing cost, ongoing revenues is the key thing in terms of a budget. Salaries and ongoing expenditures, those are things that can continue to happen year after year after year. So what you need to do is balance the inflow. How much water are you putting into the sink versus how much is going out in expenditures, and making sure that stays relatively constant. Your pool of reservoirs can be used in an emergency, can be used for a significant one-time cost. If you balance the budget by using reserves, you could probably do it 1 year, you could probably do it 2 years, but then you're going to be in a world of hurt. Organizations that have balanced budgets by using reserves over a multi-year period of time find that money runs out, that pool runs out, and then there are deeper cuts, deeper ramifications that need to occur. One of the things that Murray State has done an exceptional job with over the past 7, 8, 9 years has always made sure that it has a balanced budget based on the revenues coming in and the outflows going out. Because of that, our reductions at this particular time are not as deep as some other ones across the country are facing. That is why we do not look to reserves to balance the budget. The reserves, as I mentioned before, can be used for a one-time expenditure. J.H. Richmond Hall is a very good example. The board voted recently to restore J.H. Richmond. We are anticipating that the insurance adjustment will be in the $12.5 million range. We wanted to upgrade the facility a little bit, do maybe some enhancements, and take a look at, whenever you build something, within 6 months, you're going like, oh, I wish we would have done this. Make the lobby bigger, which in this case has been the largest discussion point, is that we need a much bigger lobby space, as well as some more gathering space throughout. We can use reserves, in this case, $2 million from the auxiliary housing unit, which is set aside for that very purpose. So it's not going to be an expense that occurs every single year. It's a one-time shot, and that's a very appropriate use of the reserves.
How much is in the reserves?
When you look at the reserves, it's a very interesting accounting mechanism. The key thing is to look at what your unrestricted reserves are. And the reason I say that is if you look at the fund balance of Murray State University, because of our pension liability, it's negative. But we have unrestricted reserves in the neighborhood of around $50 million. And again, that's used for multiple things throughout the year. We use it for deferred maintenance and things like that. We're doing some renovations of Blackburn and some other facilities on campus, and that's what those will come in to be used for.
What is the future of the tuition waiver program? You mentioned this in a letter, is getting a lot of feedback about this.
I've had more comments on the word privatization and the tuition waiver. And let me be very clear. We need to review the tuition waiver program at Murray State University. Is it an important benefit to our faculty and staff? Absolutely. It is a very important benefit, and it is one that I do not and will not eliminate, especially in its entirety for our faculty and staff. It is a mechanism to promote and opportunities for higher education. It is a tremendous benefit to our faculty and staff to have their children come to Murray State, and it is an important benefit. And so we are reviewing the policy. We are not eliminating the policy. What are we looking at? We need to look around some of the edges. Discussion points. Should the tuition waiver be used for the first bachelor's degree? Should it be used for matriculated students to as they progress towards a degree, for example? Right now, it's based on the number of courses. Should it be based on the number of credits? A lot of non-employees are eligible for the waivers. Is that appropriate? And they're available at the same level as a faculty and staff member. Is that appropriate? Part-time workers, is that appropriate to have at the same level as a full-time worker? There's a lot of nuances with regards to the tuition waiver program. For faculty and staff, absolutely. I think it's extremely important. It's something that is a recruiting mechanism. It is a strong benefit, no question about that. And we will not eliminate the program, but we do need to review the size and, the breadth and scope of the program. Who gets it, how much, and for what for?
The Kentucky Labor Cabinet Secretary, Derek Ramsey, has talked about developing business apprenticeships as a way to develop a skilled workforce. Can you describe some of the ways Murray State might be engaging in this effort?
One of the things that I think Murray State can do a lot more systemically, one of our strategic ideas and agendas, is specifically and especially as I'll go back to the privatized concept, is how to further the lifelong learning of our community and our graduates and various others. A lot of organizations, be it a business, be it a nonprofit, be it a civic group, be it a group of individuals, are looking for educational opportunities throughout their lifetime. And how can Murray State fulfill and provide continuing education opportunities, seminars, programs, offer different types of certificates along those lines? For example, you might have an industry that has had significant changes in the safety operations. How do we engage our occupational safety and health program to offer updates to those industry leaders, those industry practitioners on a regular basis and to continue to be recertified? How can we offer various courses for the accountants in the area so that they can continue to earn their credits and those various type of things? And we do that on a basis throughout the university, but what we need to do is look at is how can we be more strategic, more unified in those approaches, and to be blunt, be a little bit more aggressive. We can do this through not only the campus here in Murray, but through our regional campuses in Madisonville and Hopkinsville and Paducah and et cetera, and really working with local businesses, local industries, local civic organizations and those type of things to find those opportunities. Those type of opportunities are pretty paramount. And when we look at some of our peer universities, can create a sizable cash flow that can be used to spur on other opportunities and to ease budget pressures.
Another proposal mentioned in the town hall last week was to raise tuition rates by 3%. This is coupled with a call to increase enrollment. How will Murray State ensure competitiveness?
Well, I think one of the key things that we need to continue to look at is where our tuition rates are in relationship to our peer universities and to who we are competing with. One of the key things is that being the cheapest is not always being the best. And so it's something that we've taken a diligent look at over the last 4 years or so. We were at the very, very bottom of the public universities in the Commonwealth. Taking Kentucky State out of that discussion for a moment, but looking at our peer comprehensive universities, we were at the bottom. Price sometimes conveys a different level too, and so we do not want to be the cheapest, but we want to provide the best value. We don't want to overprice We don't want to have the sticker price so that all of a sudden it shies people away. But at the same time, we need to continue to think about how we balance the budget and what are we conveying and what is the appropriate mechanism. With the 3% increase, we're technically right above Morehead, $1. So basically, we're tied at Morehead at the base level. At a 3% increase, we would jump above Eastern Kentucky University. We would be ahead of them by roughly $55 or thereabouts per semester, $100 for the year. Is that a substantial difference that would make a difference of one person choosing Eastern Kentucky over Murray State? Most likely not. But it does put us into a very good, solid position. Eastern Kentucky has announced that they're going with a 0% tuition increase this year. But I also know that they've been thinking about what they call an asset preservation fee, that if they implement at the full level that I've heard, they will bounce above us. And so they'll be slightly ahead of us. But to be in that mix, I think, is an important area to be. What we presented at the town hall meeting is based on us increasing 3% and no one else doing anything. I do not know what Morehead is thinking about. I don't know what Northern Kentucky or Western Kentucky are thinking. U of L and UK are much higher than we are. So again, I think that we're going to be extremely well priced competitively for against our peers. A 3% increase to be compared. There's an index called the Higher Education Price Index, the HEPI. It is basically the CPI for higher education. It looks at the cost of running an institution. It looks at the utilities. It looks at the technology cost. It looks at the salaries. It looks at all those different types of things. And this year, or the year that just ended, the HEPI index was a 3.1. The year before, it was in the high twos, 2.7 or thereabouts. And so a 3% increase in tuition, is very justifiable. Does it represent a huge increase for our current returning students? I won't say that it doesn't, but it's not a real large number. And also specifically and especially for the students who have been admitted under the new model, their tuition dollars will go up a little bit to help offset some of that cost as well. So do I think we're still affordable? Absolutely. Do I think we still provide exceptional value? Absolutely. It's not a huge increase. It's lower than we've done in the past several years. And it goes back to us as a community, not just the admissions team, but us as a community, to continually stress the value of a Murray State education, to continue to stress the value of a Murray State degree at a cost of $4,542 a semester, which you will return that once you graduate from Murray State is significantly higher than what that tuition dollar is. So the investment is very, very strong and something that we need to continue to put forward.
Looking at some things coming up, there's a barbecue with Bob with some Murray State students. That's in the backyard there at Oakhurst.
That started last year. The Allegro barbecue team, Mr. Futrell down at Allegro from down in the Paris, Tennessee area, has a championship barbecue team that travels the country. At a football game once, he said, it'd be kind of fun to do a barbecue at Oakhurst and just do something fun and free for the students. I said, sure, we actually had it scheduled for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, but we were in a monsoon, so it got delayed a little bit. But again, it's a good time we target to students, and if faculty and staff want to come by and engage with students, we'll be more than happy to provide you a ribeye steak, a ribeye steak sandwich. And I will say that last year's were very, very good. So I hope people come out and enjoy the time, and especially at this time of year when the sun is starting to come out and we see the graduation right around the corner. It is time to celebrate and to congratulate one another and to think about all the great things that we have.
There's a distinguished alumni event that's coming up on April 27th.
Yeah, and I think that as we talk about the value of a Murray State degree, what is the outcome of Murray State? And it's outstanding alumni. And the Distinguished Alumni Awards recipients this year are a wonderful example of the significant opportunities provided at Murray State University. Four individuals have been selected by the Alumni Association. Florence Jones, a nursing alumna from the class of 1975, serving more than 25 years in the healthcare industry. She's broken through so many barriers of gender and race, and has just done an absolutely amazing job. Has an amazing career. She was in the Army Nurse Corps for the United States Army Reserve. Just a tremendous honor to recognize her. Joe Owen, a well-respected lawyer, business owner, real estate developer, CEO of Guardian Health Providers, tremendous supporter of Murray State. He lives in the Nashville area and is known as one of the amazing business leaders in that area. Just, again, an amazing person. He hires a lot of interns, hires a lot of students and graduates from Murray State University. Again, is a phenomenal individual who's provided scholarships and the like. The third recipient is Patricia Somerville. She completed her bachelor's degree in art just in 3 years, a class of 1972. She's attended many other universities, earned academic degrees from them in healthcare, a law degree. She is just an eclectic and a wonderful person. She loves the arts. She really espouses the importance of the liberal arts, the ability to be creative, to have critical thought. She has, again, created many scholarships at Murray State University. And just talking about her career and where it has gone and the opportunities that she has is absolutely just phenomenal. And then the fourth recipient is Tim Miller, the 12th president of Murray State University, a wonderful, wonderful man, professor emeritus, president emeritus from the accounting department. Whenever I talk to an alumnus that went through the accounting department, they always ask how Tim Miller is doing and his wife, Patsy. Just a wonderful, we're giving the award to Tim, but to be honest, it really should be to the both of them. Just amazing individuals. In my relatively short time knowing them, just a true friend, someone that I rely on to confide in, to talk with, to seek advice from, an individual that I just truly, truly enjoy. And it's just a great ambassador for Murray State University. Just, again, looking forward to that night, hearing the stories of how Murray State empowered these individuals to go on and do amazing things. We just got done talking about tuition and the value. This is the value of Murray State.
Summer course registration.
Open for business. I think it's, this is one of the opportunities for students to continue their trajectory. It's, important for students to think about summer classes. They can, take them in the mini session or the longer session, but an opportune time for the students to continue on their pathway to their degree. We continue to stress that we want our students to graduate in 4 years. So if they took, 12 credits a semester, this is an opportune time to take three or six credits and continue to get that leg up. So we would encourage all the students to talk with their advisors. We encourage all the advisors to reach out to their students, the faculty and staff to talk to the students in the halls. And, if they have the opportunity to take a summer class, that's something that we really would like them to do.
Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
And thank you very much. Really appreciate the time and opportunity to be here. I do want to end with one note as well. I want to thank SG Carthel and the Office of Multicultural Affairs. Last Friday, they hosted the Diversity Awards, the 13th annual. It, again, an amazing opportunity to recognize our students, to celebrate the diversity and inclusion that is here on campus. We have a creed that we will engage others, we will learn others from others, we will confront bigotry whenever we see it. And that night really showed the importance of that as students received honors and were provided accolades. And also he recognized at the awards dinner Don Tharp, a member of the Board of Regents, with the honor of being the African-American Heritage Lifetime Achievement Award, and his speech was just absolutely outstanding. The background coming from West Kentucky and from very, very humble beginnings, coming to Murray State University and having two or three or four people reach out to him specifically and ensured that he had the foundation to be successful. He had to have the determination and the grit. He did. He has prospered ever since leaving Murray State University. And again, that goes back to what is important about Murray State. It's our community. It is our commitment of our faculty and our staff to student success. It is admitting students who are ready and able to graduate from college that have the grit and determination. We will provide the foundation for them, but they've got to do the work. And we know that. And once they are able to do that, to leave the hallowed grounds of Murray State, to go on and do amazing things, to change the world, to change their communities, and that, to me, is the value of the Murray State community. So with that, thank you, and go Racers.